West Bank.
Palestine Action supporters out in raucous numbers again outside the Old Bailey courthouse, demanding that the 18 members of the Direct Action Group on trial here be released.
This is a court where people are tried for gruesome, brutal murders. And these people are on trial for actually trying to stop gruesome and brutal murders. In fact, there is a case here today of a couple who murdered their baby and put the baby in a plastic bag. In Gaza right now, people are putting their body parts of their loved ones in plastic bags every day. So the irony is, these people should not be anywhere near a court for trying to stop people from being murdered.
The 18 activists were arrested under the UK's Terrorism Act in August last year for targeting Israeli weapons manufacturer Elbit Systems Filton facility in Bristol and causing over $1 million in damages to it. Their supporters say their prosecution is not aimed at upholding the law.
The trial is part of a wider pattern, from arrests to censorship. The activists here say the British state is criminalizing dissent to protect Israel against accountability and scrutiny. They argue that standing up for Palestinian rights is being treated as a crime.
Sarah Coate of Stand Up to Racism, Stand Up to Imperialism has experienced it firsthand. She, too, was arrested under counterterrorism legislation, accused of supporting a proscribed organization merely for saying Palestinians had the right to defend themselves.
This is what the British state does. It's the oldest imperialist nation in the world, and it's going to try by any means possible to defend its interests. And its interests lie in the continued genocide of the Palestinian people and the repression of popular movements around the world.
But the crackdown doesn't seem to be working. While the British government treats the Filton 18 as lawbreakers and homegrown terrorists, their supporters hail them as heroes and consider them as political prisoners.
They're imprisoned because the UK state is trying to protect its relationship and its financial ties to Israel. And this is the extent that they'll go to. They're political prisoners because they have been imprisoned not for their actions, but for the government's politics and for the government's allegiances with their military outpost, aka the Zionist entity.
As Gaza continues to face relentless bombing and siege, the protesters here say they won't be silenced, vowing to keep demanding justice despite the risks. Saeed Purizap, London.
Under a unified sky, the territorial waters of Iran mirror a nation's resolve, coming alive as over 3,000 naval vessels participate in a monumental naval parade showcasing unwavering support for Palestine. The massive parade also demonstrates the strength and readiness of IRGC's naval forces, sending a strong message to adversaries just one day prior to international Quds Day rallies. This is not just a show of maritime prowess, but a symbol of solidarity, with the flags of Iran and Palestine waving proudly.
This is the fourth year that the naval parade is being held to mark the occasion, featuring civilian vessels from volunteer forces alongside other naval ships. First and foremost, this event sends a strong message of solidarity with Palestine. It also demonstrates to the Caspian Sea littoral states that this body of water represents friendship. Also, it demonstrates that Iran is always ready to support its people and protect its sovereignty against threats, as the parade is taking place simultaneously along the coast of the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman.
The parade, conducted simultaneously in Iran's territorial waters from the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman to the Caspian Sea, features a variety of vessels, from advanced naval warships to smaller boats manned by besieged volunteer forces, all proudly displaying the flag of Palestine next to the Iranian banner.
The event you are witnessing today is a naval parade conducted by the Iranian Navy and volunteer forces. Here at our naval base, 150 vessels of volunteer forces and 30 vessels from the IRGC Navy's northern base are participating in the parade in the north. This parade demonstrates solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine and condemns the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza. Additionally, it aims to showcase the military strength of the volunteer forces and to enhance unity among the various branches of the armed forces.
Ahead of international Quds Day rallies, this maritime demonstrations has turned into an annual tradition, underscoring the enduring bond between Iran and Palestine.
And that's the message from Iran's territorial waters. Unity, strength, and unwavering support for Palestine ahead of Quds Day, showcasing Iran's maritime resolve and solidarity to the world. Fateh Masumi, Babolsar.
The Israeli occupation continues to escalate, pushing further into southern Syria and now directly targeting civilians. But the people of Syria did not stand idly by. Residents fiercely resisted the unprecedented Israeli expansion, engaging in clashes with advancing forces and sacrificing martyrs and injuries in defense of their land.
The Israeli occupation attempted to impose its presence by force on farmers in Koya, but the Syrian people naturally reject colonialism and occupation. This led to confrontations in the village, where brave men stood up against the aggression, sacrificing their lives in defense of their land.
The people of Dara and the occupied Golan reaffirm their unwavering connection to Damascus. No amount of Israeli pressure, intimidation, or incentives can change that. Resistance is their natural right, enshrined in international law, and they will continue to fight against the occupation.
The reaction in Dara reflects absolute rejection of the occupation. If Israel's actions go unchallenged, mere condemnations will only pave the way for negotiations that compromise Syrian rights. That's why we support all forms of popular resistance aimed at expelling the occupiers.
For Syrians, history has shown that Israel only understands the language of force. Empty condemnations and international resolutions will not drive the occupation out of Syrian land. The youth of Syria refuse to surrender to an occupier that thrives on destruction and terror, standing instead in solidarity with the resistance in the south.
Neither condemnations nor UN resolutions would force the Zionist entity to withdraw from occupied territories. Liberation can only be achieved through armed resistance. The youth of Syria refuse to submit to this brutal occupation and stand firmly with the heroic resistance in the south.
Despite the delayed condemnation by the ruling Syrian regime, the Israeli occupation continues to escalate its aggression. However, for Syrians, the path forward remains clear: resistance until victory.
Flags of the resistance front waving proudly in unison. On this occasion, in the heart of the Iranian central city of Isfahan, people from all walks of life are present. Young and old alike filled the iconic Imam Khomeini Square, passionately reiterating their solidarity and unwavering support for the Palestinian people on International Quds Day.
We view it as our religious duty to participate in this march. Our participation is inspired by our leader, and we want to convey to the Palestinian people that we will always stand by them. They will never be left alone, and we will never stop supporting their cause.
I am a tourist in Isfahan, and since I participate in this march every year, I joined again this year to show support for the people of Gaza and the Palestinian children. Each time I witness their suffering and loss, I am moved to tears. Even now, as I am speaking to you, I am tearing up, and my heart is heavy with emotion.
Our leader has called upon us to participate in the march this day to defend the oppressed people of Palestine.
This unwavering support and solidarity serve as a powerful source of inspiration for younger generations. It fosters a deep sense of commitment and unity, encouraging them to stand up for justice and advocate for the rights of those who are oppressed.
When we witness the tragic loss of thousands of children in one part of the world, we cannot remain indifferent. It is crucial for us to discern between truth and falsehood, and I recognize that my presence here symbolizes a commitment to fight against falsehood while standing firmly in support of the truth. From the depths of my heart, I truly wish I could be in Palestine, actively contributing to the cause. I urge people around the world to take to the streets and openly declare their support for those who are suffering.
The voices rise in unison, echoing a message of hope and resilience for those facing oppression. As the day unfolds, the spirit of unity and determination shines brightly, symbolizing the enduring fight for justice.
As chants echo and flags wave on International Quds Day, the message remains clear. This annual event stands as a powerful symbol of resistance, one that will endure and continue through time. Farzan Ashuryun, Isfahan.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. so to thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may his blessings be upon his messenger endlessly, and his salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willest, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. U.S. President Donald Trump and his government are undertaking a widespread visa review process, revoking hundreds of visas and placing hundreds more under scrutiny, targeting mostly foreign nationals engaged in pro-Palestine activism. Secretary of State Marco Rubio confirmed the scale of the crackdown, announcing that he's canceled visas for more than 300 people that he called lunatics connected to campus pro-Palestine protests throughout America. This controversial campaign flies directly in the face of America's constitutional guarantees. Arrests, detentions, and deportations of young women and men speaking out against genocide and ethnic cleansing by U.S. authorities is the focus of this edition of your Spotlight program. And now for our guests. Joining us, Mr. Daniel Kobalik, author and activist, joining us out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the U.S. Mr. Paul Lerudy, former U.S. government advisor, joining us out of Berkeley, California, also in the States.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Daniel, we'll start with you out there in Pittsburgh. Now, why does a young Turkish-born PhD student, Daniel, have to be treated like a criminal, arrested, accosted by U.S. authorities in broad daylight by masked men, undercover agents, for writing an op-ed in her university school paper asking Tufts University to cut ties with Israel? Daniel, her name, Rumeysa Öztürk, 30 years old, PhD student. Now, these are people usually, Danny, we celebrate in humanity, not ostracize and incarcerate. What is going on?
Yeah, well, it is, you know, insane that, you know, the U.S., which purports to be a bastion of free speech and democracy, is treating its guests like this, you know, and these are people from other countries who have a right to be here, a legal right. And by the way, they have a First Amendment right to free speech under the Constitution. Some of the Bill rights are written in a way that they only protect citizens, but not the First Amendment. It protects everyone in the United States, even you know, green card holders or other visa holders. So what's being done is unconstitutional, but it's also just wrong. I mean, what kind of message does it send to the rest of the world that we would treat, you know, young scholars, young students this way? And they're not just being deported, you know, they're being basically kidnapped and sent to undisclosed locations. They can't communicate with people. It really is shameful. I've never seen anything like it, actually, in my lifetime.
Thank you, Daniel and Paul. Welcome to the conversation here to our in our Spotlight program. Good to have you. Paul, earlier in the month, this all kicked off, you very well remember, with Mahmoud Khalil's case creating international uproar. A Ivy League student, Columbia University, a renowned top university in the States. You can imagine what kind of kids attend this esteemed institution. One of the brilliant minds, I should say, of our world. His wife, an American citizen. The Trump administration revoked his green card for what they called anti-Semitic support for Hamas. So how does, Paul, anti-genocide, anti-apartheid, anti-ethnic cleansing, anti-occupation somehow make you an enemy of the Jewish people, a racist, a bigot?
It doesn't matter if you're an enemy of the Jewish people. Not to say that he is. I have no indication that he's an enemy, I know very few people who are enemies of the Jewish people. But the point is, we have free speech in this country, and you're entitled to speak against Jewish people or Christian people or Muslim people, or you're entitled to be a bigot in this country. It's not illegal to be deluded and nasty and all of these sort of things. But he's not. It doesn't matter. The point is to paint him as an enemy of Israel and of the United States. And besides, what country are we in? Are we in Israel or are we in the United States? Hmm. And it's plain to me to see that we're graduating. We're moving towards a country that is run by Zionism. You can see it everywhere in all the policies that we have. So, where is Zionism in the Constitution of the United States? Where is it in the international law? And I don't remember Zionism being part of Judaism until the 19th century either. This is nonsense. These people have the right to their opinion, but they do not have the right to cause other people to lose their rights and privileges, and they do not have the right to enforce their ideas to the detriment, not including the mortal detriment of the Palestinian people or anyone else. It's as simple as that.
And Daniel, another student here, Badar Khan Suri, a Georgetown scholar from India, his wife, also an American citizen. Now, the U.S., you very well know, has made quite a fuss about a dual U.S.-Israeli nationals that are being held captive in Gaza. So where is that protection for spouses of American citizens? Please tell me that religion, Daniel, is not a part of the reason these young boys and girls are being targeted.
Well, I don't think it's really religion. I agree with Paul that, you know, this is about Zionism, which, oh, I suppose it's a religion of sorts, but it's not, a true part of Judaism. And that's what really this is about. It's about, well, there's a few things happening here. I mean, in essence, this is about protecting U.S. policy towards Israel. It's about defending the genocide that's happening in Gaza right now. I just read from Haaretz, which is an Israeli newspaper, that in one evening, Israel killed 300 Palestinians in Gaza. I mean, it's just extraordinary. And the U.S. cannot defend this, and so it has to crack down on people who raise this issue. And so what this is about is going after people they think they can legally go after. Again, I don't think they can under the First Amendment, but it's certainly easier to go after, visa holders rather than citizens. And they're doing this in order to chill dissent, to send a message to people that if you speak out for Palestine, even if you're a Palestinian, by the way, you will be punished. And what a lot of people are predicting, and I predicted myself, is they're going to first come for the visa holders, and then they're going to come for citizens. They will start doing this to U.S. citizens, right? Especially when they try to come back into the country from travel. So this is a slippery slope, and it's quite concerning.
It's interesting you brought that up, because that was going to be one of my questions, that once they've exhausted going after, because we know these thousands upon thousands of protests over the last 16, 17 months now, that they've involved more than just immigrants, the majority being U.S. citizens on these college campuses. So what are they going to do when they exhaust going after immigrants? But we'll get to that. Yoon So Chang, Paul, young Korean-born lady. As a matter of fact, her entire life, beyond 6 years old, she was in the States. Also a Columbia University student. Now, her arrest for protesting the college expulsion of pro-Palestinian activists and students. The U.S. First Amendment, Paul, and to Daniel and your point, not the second, not the third, but First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution gives you the right, free assembly, free speech, religion, and press. So why is the U.S. willing, Paul, to throw all of this out for the Israeli regime, targeting kids and gifted kids at that, Paul, standing for humanity for a regime that cares little about it?
Well, that's it. If you want to have a regime that cares little about it, then you have to silence the voices of those who don't agree with you. This is becoming a police state here. In fact, it has been becoming a police state for a very long time. And I, just to the point of the threat to American citizens, I might point out that when I was flying back from Europe, from after visiting Palestine and the Middle East some years ago, I was stopped in Canada by the United States Immigration and Customs. And they kept me out of the United States overnight. But finally, I had to say to them that, I'm sorry, I'm an American citizen. I'm not a Canadian citizen. I didn't apply for immigration to Canada, and I don't think Canada is of a mind to accept me as a citizen. So you have no choice. You have to accept me back. You have no place else to send me. So, but it started years ago, and it's only going to get worse if we sit back and accept it. What we have to do is to resist our oppression here in the United States to the same extent that Palestinians are resisting their oppression in Palestine. We have to do this. The demonstrations are forbidden, but we have to go beyond demonstrations.
And thanks, Paul. And the thing, Daniel, here, you've spent decades giving political cover to a regime that has grossly hundreds of times violated international law. But allowing this regime, giving it cover to, violate your own constitution for the Israeli entity, it seems much more personal. Not a lot of U.S. leadership seemingly would go this far. Why is this cabinet, or do you see other cabinets doing the same thing? Because we haven't seen it to this extent. We've seen the anti-Semitic label tagged on a lot of people over the decades for, siding with Palestinians. But this kind of action, gross action to attack and deport college students, even with federal judges giving them waivers, and you're still going to violate the waiver and put the kid up for deportation. Why would you do this for Israel?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to money. The AIPAC, the Israeli lobbying firm, gives millions and millions of dollars to candidates. Trump himself received, $100 million or something from a well-known Zionist. So a lot of it is money, but it's not just that. I mean, the truth is, if you support a genocide like the one in Gaza with billions of dollars of armaments, if you're supporting that kind of unrestrained violence, of course that violence will come home. Of course, if you're willing to do that to babies in Gaza, ultimately you will be willing to do that to your own citizens. And that's what we're seeing. And frankly, when you look at American history, the worst crackdowns on civil rights have always come in support of war, right? The ones I can think of are the First World War, where they were arresting people, very prominent people like Eugene V. Debs, for speaking out against the war. Of course, in World War II, you had the internment of the Japanese. When a country like the U.S. fights an unpopular war, and this war in Gaza is very unpopular, they end up turning to repression to defend that war.
Mm. And, Paul, these college campus protests, highly organized, highly peaceful, a strong display of what young Americans and future Americans, especially the educated, want their country to stand for, be part of, or not be a part of. How's the message here not exactly what you would want from young minds in a democracy? If you really stand as the U.S. for what you claim to stand for, how do you justify attacking the messenger in this instance?
Well, you answered the question yourself, that this would, what your assertion would be true in a democracy, and that's exactly what we're losing here. We're in the process of losing a democracy, and we're pretty far down the road, if you ask me, and we're going farther. I have the impression that most countries of the world have more democracy than we do right now. So, yes, human rights are being thrown in the trash barrel because the system in the United States rewards those who can get them enough money to get themselves elected, and that is the main game of the Israel, the Zionist lobby in the United States, which uses vast amounts of the money of the arms producers in this country, and it assigns essentially at least one, usually two, and maybe more, to every member of Congress to stay in Washington full time, to pressure them and to advise them and to make sure that as long as they are doing the bidding of Israel, then they will be reelected. And if they don't, then they will arrange for the opposition candidate to win the next election. This is how it operates here. You can hardly, if you're in Congress, you can hardly speak out at all, and they don't. And if you're not in Congress, it seems we're going in the same direction. We're not going to be allowed to speak out.
And Daniel, I want to get into the justification U.S. authorities are using to go after, detain, and try to revoke the visas, the revocation and the deportation of these young students. Here's the justification the U.S. authorities are using. They're saying that support for Palestinians is support for Hamas. And since we as the U.S. have designated Hamas as a terrorist organization, then support for Palestinians equates to support for terrorism. Now, this conflating, you very well know, it is not sound, it's not logical, it's not rational, it is not a valid argument. In fact, Daniel, it is a fallacy. It is false reasoning, as any logician would tell you. So how sad and pathetic is this stretch that U.S. authorities cannot come up with a more consistent, more plausible, a better position to crack down on these young students?
Well, first of all, it has to be said that these anti-terrorism laws are used quite often as an end around free speech protections, right? Because they want to claim that anything you do, for example, in the case of defending Palestine, is somehow material support to Hamas, which, by the way, is absurd. I have a First Amendment right to say I support Hamas. That is not material support to them. Now, if I somehow coordinate my message with Hamas, that may be different. But in any case, just saying you support them, you have a First Amendment right to do that. But again, most of the people that are protesting are not doing it in support of Hamas. They're doing it in support of the Palestinian people. So, yes, to bootstrap it that way is very disingenuous. But again, once you get it into the terms of fighting terrorism, then a lot can be allowed to do. And that was the danger of passing this terrorist legislation after 9/11, the Patriot Act, for example, because it opened the door to repressing dissent and free speech. And that's exactly what you're seeing right now.
And Paul, can I get your take on the same failed pretext and argument to justify this crackdown?
Well, if the justification is that it gives support to Hamas, what's wrong with that? Hamas is fighting the same fight that other freedom fighters have fought around the world. What are they fighting for? They're fighting for independence, for sovereignty for Palestine, for freedom to live freely in their own country. At least they want at least as much as what Israel has. In fact, they don't want it just for them. They want it for the people of Israel too. They would like to have a country where you can have different opinions, including the Zionists themselves, as long as you're not abrogating the rights of other people. What is wrong with this? Have you seen the way Hamas is treating the Israeli captives that they had? You can argue with the question of taking civilian captives, but in terms of the treatment, they have been kind and civil. Compare that with the way the Palestinians are treated, the Palestinian prisoners are treated, the abuse, the torture, the rape, the death of them. I would take Hamas any day, and I will fly a Hamas flag on the street. I hope Hamas will come and liberate the United States. Because the way we're going. But it doesn't have to be Hamas. We can liberate ourselves.
But more concerning here, what I'm trying to get at, and Daniel, help me out here, is that we've documented the most vile and extremist elements, both in Israeli society and these far-right settlers, the kind of rhetoric we hear from them. and also from the social apparatus, I mean, pardon, the political apparatus there in the current cabinet. You hear these people basically calling all Palestinians terrorists, justifying the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, saying that there is no such thing as an innocent Palestinians. You heard of them, one of them justifying dropping a nuclear bomb on Gaza. Today, how concerned should we be that that very same voice and position is basically resonating with U.S. leadership in the White House and this cabinet?
Well, it certainly is resonating, and you will hear U.S. leaders in the executive branch, in the Congress, say things exactly like that, talk about the Palestinians as if all of them are terrorists from the age of, you know, one day to 100, which, by the way, is genocidal talk, because obviously that is dehumanizing an entire population and saying an entire population is a legitimate military target. But the other thing that happens is when you dehumanize the other and you commit horrible atrocities against the other, like murder, rape, etc., that Paul was discussing, then you cross a line, and once that line is crossed, you're willing to do that to, you know, people of your own nationality and ethnicity. And that's happening in Israel, right? They're raping people, abusing people, first the Palestinians, but now you're seeing Israelis being raped by other Israelis. You see women, female soldiers being raped by Israeli soldiers. And again, when the U.S. supports that those types of atrocities abroad, it doesn't take much to imagine that they're on their way to doing those sorts of atrocities against their own people.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program, and stay safe to both of you there. Mr. Daniel Kovalik, their author and activist, joining us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Paul Lurie, a former U.S. government advisor, joining us out of Berkeley, California, both from the States. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Iran's pivotal role in the fight against global terrorism and its broader contributions to global stability are often misunderstood and even manipulated in international discourse, particularly in Western media. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, while the Islamic Republic of Iran is frequently portrayed in a negative light, its efforts to combat terrorism, support regional stability, and contribute to global peace have been significant. Iran's role in curbing the spread of violent extremism, stabilizing volatile regions, and fostering diplomacy offers valuable resources for global counterterrorism efforts, providing notable benefits to the region and the world at large. One of the most significant aspects of Iran's contributions to global security is its consistent and active role in combating terrorism, particularly concerning groups like Daesh, Al-Qaeda, and other extremist terrorist organizations. These groups do not only pose a threat to West Asia, but also have global ramifications, affecting countries in Europe, North America, and beyond. Iran's strategic actions in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon have been crucial in preventing the expansion of transnational terrorist networks. In Iraq and Syria, where Daesh Takfiri terrorists once posed a major threat, Iran's military and intelligence presence was essential in dismantling the group. Cooperation between the Popular Mobilization Forces, PMF, and the Iraqi government played a key role in eradicating the terrorist organization and preventing its further expansion into the Europe and the US. Iran's direct military intervention in the fight against Daesh significantly reduced the group's ability to launch larger-scale attacks in other parts of the world, thereby enhancing global security. The potential resurgence of such terrorist organizations poses an ongoing threat not only to West Asia but to global peace, making Iran's involvement a crucial factor in countering their reach. The European Union and the United States have also faced blowback from terrorist organizations that were initially created or supported by Western powers in West Asia, as former U.S. President Donald Trump previously admitted. These attacks underscore the dangers posed by radicalized elements. Iran's strategic role in preventing the spread of terrorism cannot be overstated. By actively countering terrorist organizations within the West Asia region, Iran has helped stem the flow of foreign mercenary fighters and limit the operational capabilities of groups that might target Europe or North America. By supporting local governments and resistance groups, Iran has also prevented these terrorist organizations from establishing strongholds where they could train and launch attacks against nations worldwide. Furthermore, Iran's extensive intelligence network, deeply embedded in the region, has provided valuable insights into terrorist movements and operations. This intelligence has been shared with international actors, including Europe, China, Russia, and others, further demonstrating Iran's crucial role in counterterrorism efforts. Despite the strained diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Iran, intelligence cooperation has undeniably contributed to greater global security, particularly in Europe, where the risk of terrorism remains high. Iran's approach to combating terrorism and promoting stability stands in a stark contrast to the policies of some Western nations. The United States and European powers have frequently relied on military interventions to address terrorism and regional instability, often resulting in prolonged conflicts and unintended consequences. The imposed wars on Iraq and Afghanistan, for example, led to significant loss of life, displacement, and regional instability, with effects that extended far beyond West Asia. In contrast, while Iran's approach is not without complexities, it has often focused on supporting local actors, providing intelligence, and engaging in diplomatic efforts. By avoiding direct military intervention in many cases, and instead offering strategic support to regional governments, Iran has contributed to a more sustainable approach to addressing terrorism and regional instability. Iran's contributions to global security extend beyond counterterrorism to include the fight against drug trafficking, a global threat with devastating consequences. According to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, approximately 271 million people worldwide used drugs in 2020, with opioids being the most harmful category. Afghanistan, which produces around 85% of the world's opium, serves as the epicenter of this crisis. From there, narcotics are smuggled through various routes, including the Balkan route and the southern route into Europe, Africa, and other parts of the world. Iran, sharing a long and porous border with Afghanistan and Pakistan, serves as a critical frontline defender in the global war on drug trafficking. Its strategic location makes it both a victim of the crisis and a key player in preventing the spread of narcotics. The impact of the illicit drug trade extends beyond Iran's borders, affecting global economies, destabilizing societies, and undermining development efforts. Iran's anti-drug efforts contribute significantly to international stability and security. These measures have proven effective in disrupting drug supply chains. For instance, Iranian authorities seize thousands of tons of narcotics annually, preventing them from reaching European and other international markets. In 2022 alone, Iran confiscated over 1.4 million kilograms of opiates and synthetic drugs, underscoring its pivotal role in global drug control efforts. The fight against drug trafficking has come at a tremendous human cost for Iran. Since the early 1980s, more than 4,000 Iranian law enforcement officers and military personnel have lost their lives while confronting armed drug traffickers. Thousands more have been injured in violent clashes with heavily armed smugglers determined to protect their illicit trade. These sacrifices highlight Iran's dedication to safeguarding not only its own citizens, but also the global community from the scourge of drug addiction. The financial burden of combating drug trafficking is equally staggering. Iran allocates substantial funds annually to securing its borders, training personnel, and acquiring the necessary equipment. Additionally, the indirect costs associated with treating drug addiction and addressing crime-related issues further restrain economic resources. Despite these challenges, Iran remains steadfast in its resolve to eliminate drug trafficking from its territory and beyond. Despite the often unfair portrayal of Iran in Western media, its role in combating terrorism and promoting global stability should not be underestimated. Iran's direct engagement in the fight against groups like Daesh, its commitment to preventing the spread of terrorism to Europe and the U.S., and its diplomatic efforts to resolve conflicts make it a key player in global security. While political and ideological differences may persist, acknowledging Iran's contributions to counterterrorism and regional stability provides valuable insights that could benefit not only Europe and the United States, but the entire world.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces kill over 60 civilians in a single day across Gaza, increasing the Palestinian death toll since the resumption of the regime's genocide to over 900. The United States conducts fresh airstrikes on Yemen's capital following the Yemeni army's successful operations against the U.S. and Israel. And the Prime Minister of Greenland dismisses Trump's comments about taking control of the island, saying Greenland's future is only determined by its own people.